Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Mags with 30 minutes on South African and global news. We are live and then up as a podcast. Interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts, all in a concise and informative update. It's Tuesday, the 18th of June, and coming up on the program, Inauguration Week. What tone is the president going to set? We'll try to get behind the political strategy of the new Progressive Caucus, while the South African Medical Association today is calling for a slimmed-down cabinet, and how to drive more young people into the agri sector. It's now understood that the Umkhonto we Sizwe party will join the Progressive Caucus. It's a newly formed parliamentary grouping and represents around 12-13% of the National Assembly. And one of those parties in the caucus is the African Transformation Movement, the ATM. And first up on the program today, we are joined by its president, Vuyo Zungula. And Mr. Zungula, first of all, then, you are challenging the outcome of the election. And you've been quoted as saying you are the victim of miscalculation, vote rigging and voter corruption. Could you be more specific and can you confirm whether this is all still going ahead?
Yes, indeed. As the ATM, we filed papers with the Electoral Court with a view of setting aside the election results, and we are calling for a rerun of the elections, particularly because there has been irregularities that have happened and that are widespread in terms of how these elections were managed. The first was the fact that the voter management device was not working, which is an important mechanism to guard against people voting more than once. The fact that VMD was not working across many different voting stations across the country is a cause for concern. Secondly, there was a issue of the Section 24, which was not properly communicated to the voters, which made that some voters would not be able to cast their votes, which is a violation of the basic laws of our country and the Constitution, which is the right to vote.
So it's your contention then that we are in a constitutional crisis right now. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, we are of the view that the elections, the manner in which they were managed, they were not free and fair, and thus the only remedy is that there must be the rerun of the elections, but it must be coupled by an extensive inquiry that will be done in a form of court proceedings, which should direct some of these issues to be dealt with in court, so that you don't just say have a rerun of the elections, but you don't deal with the issues that made these elections not to go as in accordance to what they're supposed to be.
Yet your party is still part of the new parliamentary structure. I'm curious to know why you have chosen to participate if you're challenging the very legitimacy of the election itself.
We are of the view that we must comply, and after complying with the announcement of the results, we utilize all other available mechanisms, such as going to court to challenge the outcome of these elections. Because number one, justice in our country takes time. And again, what is happening in parliament requires that we also need to state our positions in parliament and not give a free rein to the parties that are currently in government or currently in parliament to do as they please without being checked, which is by us as a party. So there's no contradiction when we are saying we are complying and complaining at the same time.
Could you explain to me then how this new Progressive Caucus is going to work and what you see as your principal remit or priority?
Critically for us, it is to push for policies that will bring about transformation in our country so that the ownership patterns of the economy, the land and the minerals are able to be altered to benefit the people, which is the African majority, instead of what we see now, which is the ownership patterns of the economy and the land and the minerals. It is only a few families. Again, we're of the view that there needs to be parties that are strongly rooted in constitutionalism, whereby we do what is required by the Constitution in terms of holding the executive accountable and Parliament fulfilling its oversight mechanisms. So that is what this Progressive Caucus is going to focus on, which is for parties in Parliament to do what they are required to do by the Constitution, which is oversight, and then push for the legislative amendments when it comes to transforming the economy.
Is it your intention to be a spoiler at every turn? In other words, to vote against every motion and every piece of legislation that the GNU brings to the House?
Not at all. If it is a progressive proposal, motion that is brought, we'll always support it. For example, the ANC brought a motion, and there was a motion that was brought about in the previous term about dealing with the Palestine and Israel conflict. We voted with that motion. However, if we view a motion that it is not progressive, it is counter what the people need, obviously we are going to state our rationale behind not supporting that particular motion. Otherwise, whether the ANC or the GNU is right, we'll support it. However, when it is counter-progressive, we'll obviously oppose it.
Is the MK going to lead the Progressive Caucus given its size?
We've not discussed that because we met as a Progressive Caucus last week. We heard from the MK that is intending to take up seats in Parliament and join us. So we're going to take it from there. Otherwise, we've not reached any conclusion in terms of who becomes the leader, because at this moment, we've not decided as to the leadership structure of the Progressive Caucus.
And just a final question, will the Progressive Caucus be attending this week's inauguration?
The different parties are going to make that particular decision, because as a Progressive Caucus, there are instances whereby we believe that we need to come together as Progressive Caucus to speak in one voice. There are also issues whereby we respect the independence of the different political parties, whereby they can decide what is best for their own respective parties. Therefore, we've not set as a caucus to say what we're going to do as these seven parties is we're going to attend or not attend.
I am going to leave it there with my thanks. Vuyo Zungula from the ATM, I do appreciate your time today.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Well, talking of the inauguration, government says it's all set for the event, which takes place tomorrow at the Union Buildings in Pretoria. So what is in store and just how complicated are the logistics regarding an event like this? Acting Director General at GCIS, that's the Government Communication Information System, is Nomonde Mnukwa, who joins us on the program now. Welcome and thank you very much for talking to us today. The general tone that I'm seeing from your statement is that government wants to see this as a unifying moment. Amplify that for me a little. What are you trying to achieve tomorrow by saying that?
Good afternoon, Jeremy, and your listeners. Indeed, as South Africa, we're looking forward to be that rainbow nation, which initially founded us as a nation. If you remember, when we came out of the dispensation of apartheid, we then said we want to see South Africans united, non-racial, non-sexist, a nation. And that's what we are looking at. We are looking also at looking back and saying, 30 years on now, we need to have social cohesion more than ever before. However, we look at the milestones that are already saying to us, we are there and we want to enhance that and we want to nurture that. Because if you look at the outcomes of the elections that we have, it shows that our democracy is thriving, our democracy is resilient, and it shows that we are a nation that is able to listen to the voice of the public and be able to be matured and say, because the democracy this democracy cannot be only for government, but it means everyone, the public, the civil society, the private sector. And therefore, when people have spoken through their votes, we then are saying, let's move forward, let's envision a 30-year onwards as a nation whereby we are growing further our democracy, but we are saying we respect the constitution and we protect the constitutional rights. So basically, that's what we are saying. We are saying everyone belongs in this country. Everyone has a right and everyone has to be respected, and the voices of the people have to be respected because they have spoken through their votes.
All of those intentions are very worthy and important and noble. You talk about a return to the Rainbow Nation 30 years ago, but you'll also concede that that rainbow in many respects is in tatters, that there is a lot of work that needs to be done in order to get back to that feeling of optimism that we experienced 30 years ago. And much of that is going to hinge on the tone of the address that the president gives tomorrow. That's absolutely critical, because you make one mistake in that respect and the whole edifice can be torn down.
I think you are right. We started on a good note and we thought we were all on board. And therefore, we loosened up in terms of strengthening social cohesion, because we thought everybody knew the vision of the new South Africa, that it was of a non-racial and non-sexist country. And therefore, in the midst of us loosening up and focusing on the other things, we saw some things starting to creep up. And definitely the president will be able to talk about that, because much as we are a diverse nation, we are a nation that is founded on Ubuntu principles. We are a nation that has that puts our constitution and the fundamental rights of the people on top of everything. So everything is about the South Africans first and what they want and what we have to do so that we have a better South Africa going forward.
What type of message does government need to send tomorrow to those who are politically disaffected, those who are outside of the tent of the government of national unity? Many who have now reformed and coalesced into this progressive entity or this progressive coalition.
I think the first part is about saying the history or the theory tells us that once a democracy is 20 years old, it generally collapses and there's normally a regress. However, ours, we are 30 years onwards and we are seeing it being resilient, because the expectations in generally would be from these elections that we have had. There would be some people wanting to cling to power and not want to understand that the voters are the ones who are deciding who should be their government. And therefore, it is very important that we first say, whilst as a nation, we went through apartheid, but we got out of apartheid not through war, but through peaceful negotiations. So we are a peaceable a nation, we are a country that engages, we have structures to engage, we have rights to protect and constitutional responsibilities to follow. And therefore, it is okay for people to have things that they are concerned about and they're not happy about. But it is not okay for people to then work outside the formal structures that would enable their concerns to be heard properly and to be dealt with. So I think for me, that is number one. But number two, we are saying we are putting South Africans first. We had a situation whereby we called upon for people to come and vote in numbers. Obviously, the turnout wasn't what we expected, but the people who have voted, it means they have decided how the nation should be going forward. And therefore, there's no party that has won an outright majority, meaning which the voters themselves are the ones through their votes who have determined what should be going forward.
According to a statement that was given by government a little earlier, it was calling on South Africans to take a few hours out of their time to devote attention to what is termed a special occasion. I guess one of the issues that we need to raise in that respect is many people simply can't take the time off tomorrow because of the state of the economy. And then the other big issue that we need to establish, just in terms of the message that we're going to hear tomorrow, how much of it is going to be grand gesture and how much practical information are we going to get? particularly when it comes to an issue like the size of the cabinet, for instance, and the more details regarding the government of national unity. I think we are rejoined by Nomonde Mnukwa, who is Acting Director General at the GCIS. And let's pick up on that last point that I was making while we were trying to re-establish contact with you. Is this going to be a speech tomorrow and a day of grand gestures, or are we going to get more detail on how the government of national unity is actually going to look and work practically, but at an executive level?
Basically, tomorrow we're expecting that the president will really hail the nation for how the elections have unfolded to a point that we had very peaceful elections. We also hope that the president will be able to talk to the issues that are critical in the country, particularly growing the economy, that will in turn ensure that we create more jobs, dealing about the investment.
All right. I think we're going to move on. Obviously, a little bit of difficulty there in terms of communication. I've been in conversation with Nomonde Mnukwa, who's Acting Director General at the GCIS. But let's move on and continue talking about the inauguration. And today, the South African Medical Association is calling on President-elect Cyril Ramaphosa to slash the size of his cabinet and then use the savings to hire more healthcare workers. I want to get a perspective now from Dr. Mvuyisi Mzukwa, who is the chairperson of the South African Medical Association. And Doctor, a very warm welcome to the program. And first of all, then, and very simply, why is SAMA making this call?
Thank you so much for that question, Jeremy. You'll recall that last year there was an announcement by government on austerity measures, and that affected the healthcare system a lot because we couldn't hire more healthcare professionals or even improve or renovate the infrastructure, let alone, you know, the primary healthcare shortages that we experience on a daily basis. But the other thing is, if we are called on, you know, to work with the government of national unity and not point fingers, as it is alluded to by the president of the DA, I think we are doing exactly that, you know, to suggest to government that there are other ways of trying to keep down in terms of expenditure, because if we are a small economy. But on top of that, we're having, you know, a huge debt as the country. We're paying for every rand, we're paying 72 cents to service the debt. So because of those issues, we thought there are other ways. Just from the beginning, you know, of the formulation of this government, we do need to suggest some changes, you know, to obviously to save money so that we can take that money and use it somewhere else, especially in the healthcare sector.
If that money is not forthcoming, what do you think the consequences are for the sector? And do you believe that the system as it stands right now is getting worse?
Well, we have been raising our concerns, you will recall, from the last few years now, because we are noting that the system is falling apart. There are many examples, you know, that I could come up with. And also, we've been saying to government, if you do not inject or invest in healthcare, we are going to still have a serious problem of shortages of healthcare workers that leads to burnout, that leads to litigation. Hence, we're bleeding a lot of money from litigation because of these challenges that we have. If people are using broken equipment, if people are using torches in theater, you know, because there's load shedding and the generators are not kicking in because they are not well maintained. So those are it's a chain of problems. Mm. So we're saying to government, if you do not invest in healthcare, you are actually paralyzing, you know, the very same state, because at the end of the day, you are litigated. You pay that money out, you know, to lawyers and those that are aggrieved.
Whether it's new investment or whether it's a call to reduce the size of the cabinet, how confident are you that you're being listened to, that your proposals are being taken seriously, considering the political complexities of now having to accommodate various coalition partners?
We are hopeful that, you know, the government will listen. we know that they're trying to balance things out, but I mean, what you are raising is something that is very obvious. Because if you look at us, Jeremy, we're a small economy compared to other countries like Germany, you know, with 15 ministers, with a very complex economy. And you look, for example, at Japan, 19 ministers. All these complex economies have got a small number of ministers. Look at the USA. In population is six times our population, but they've got about 24. So we're asking ourselves, why can't we, as a small economy, you know, try and reduce our, or downsize our cabinet so that we really get something out of it? Because if you look at it, Jeremy, for one minister, this minister must have one home in Cape Town and another one in Gauteng, and let alone the other perks that comes with being a minister. So if you save just on one minister, it's quite a lot of money. So if you are going to take down the size of that cabinet, it's going to save the country. And I think that, you know, we need to be very serious, because healthcare is a very hot political potato that people have been talking about in their manifestos. And I think that they need to do something about it now than later.
Let me just ask you one last question. Is the South African Medical Association hoping for the appointment of a new health minister?
Well, ours, Jeremy, honestly, it's not about personalities, but it's about, you know, what should be done in the healthcare system. Whoever comes, we must see the improvement. We must see somebody who's inspiring hope to communities. But what we have seen so far is not what we expected as the association. We've not seen, you know, leadership that, you know, attempts to resolve the problems that we're facing or the challenges that are there in the healthcare system.
Thank you very much for joining us today. That's Dr. Mvuyisi Mzukwa, the chairperson of the South African Medical Association. I appreciate your time.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
All right, let's pivot in a different direction now. And is the country and the economy taking seriously enough the future of agriculture and bringing younger people into the fold? Dr. Melissa van der Merwe is a lecturer in the Department of Agricultural Economics and the Faculty of Agri-Sciences at Stellenbosch University, and suggests that introducing agricultural education in primary and secondary schools can, in her words, ignite passion and curiosity in young minds as far as the sector is concerned. She joins me on the program now. And Dr. van der Merwe, first of all, why do you think that agriculture is still viewed as a last resort to many young people?
Well, Jeremy, I had a few conversations with students and some young learners also, you know, high school learners. I did quite a bit of research, bit of reading on studies that has already been done. And a lot of the work that has been done was done in developing countries, low-income countries specifically. And a lot of those learners have the example of struggling smallholder farmers. So they don't have the, you know, example of the big commercial farmers that we usually see in more developed countries like the US and Europe, for example. So view and the picture that is sort of drawn in the explanations are old person who's often, you know, dusty and dirty and with his hands dirty and working with animals that's usually smelly. And yeah, so it's sort of portrayed as a career that is for the old and for the poor and for struggling people of a lower social class. So I think that's why our kids sort of pull away from that, because they don't want to be associated with something like that and a career like that.
And I suppose we lose sight of the fact sometimes that agriculture, as far as the South African economy, is becoming more and more critical, and it's new tech-driven skills that are needed in that particular sector. I'm correct, aren't I?
Yes, exactly. So that's also a big topic globally, is that the careers in agriculture is not just at the farm level anymore. So more and more we are moving careers in agriculture beyond the farm gate. So yes, the farm gate's obviously still very important, because that's where we produce the actual food that we consume. But if you think about the processes that food needs to go through from the farm to where it ends on our plates, in terms of the more science type jobs, if you think about food safety, for one example, there's a lot of opportunities beyond the farm gate that's much more attractive and that uses the new technologies and uses, you know, AI and uses blockchain and uses all these new and interesting things that the youth are interested in, and that they are, I mean, they are in the generation, or that they were born in the generation that lives with these technologies.
If your suggestion is going to be taken seriously, though, and given what you've just said, it would be critical to balance the current curriculum, particularly when it comes to mathematics, science, biology, to make sure that students are well prepared for modern agricultural careers. So in other words, before you can start introducing additional components to the curriculum, you've got to get the basics right. And that's something we're not doing in this country sufficiently.
Yes, I agree with you. I mean, as a lecturer at the university, we often deal with students who struggle with math, and we deal with consequences. And if you compare our students with international students, specifically from the States and the European universities, I mean, there's a huge difference in terms of our abilities to do math. And I mean, we know why our kids struggle with math. And I mean, like you said, we need to get that right. And if you look at the matric results, I also use a little bit of that in my analysis, the curves are relatively flat. So we have more students in schools, or learners in schools. But if you look at the number of students that gets access to universities and that do math and that gets distinctions in maths, those lines are flat. So the problem is we have the same number of students enrolling for the same types of programs that universities, and universities are getting more and more competitive. So we are all fighting for the same small pool of students to fulfill many high-skilled jobs.
And within those jobs, you also refer to something, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, agripreneurship. So we're not just talking about getting people into big agri, but there's a lot of opportunity at a lower level, and we are sorely in need of more entrepreneurship in this country.
Yes, 100%. And I mean, it excites me so much to talk to the youth. They have so many fascinating ideas and they're not afraid. And I think it comes with maybe a little naivety from the youth. So they are much more risk seeking in a sense. So I've spoken to many youth that started their own businesses. They saw a need in the communities where they are for an insurance product or a financing product or you know, a need for learning more about something, and they just started their own businesses. And I think the online world that we live in makes that so much more easier for them to just start these businesses and just run with it. So, and again, that's not going back to, you know, farm level businesses. This is sort of like using technology to be part of the agricultural system and the food system and to make a difference in that, because that's your passion, but your passion is not necessarily to be a struggling farmer, for example.
All right, a final question then. You've raised the issue. How do you move this debate further up the agenda? Because I'm also going to suggest to you that it is competing with a lot of other priorities.
Yeah, of course it is. So ultimately, and I think that's probably the advantage, is we all have to eat, and we eat multiple times a day. Agriculture is important. It's important for our economy. It has the potential to create a lot of jobs. And there's also a lot of supporting services supporting the agricultural sector. If you think about the finance sector, the insurance sector, and I can go on and on. So I think it's important to sort of the sector remains sustainable, and that we have a sustainable influx of youngsters that's interested and passionate about the industry. And to get that right, we have to go back to school level. We have to make sure that these youngsters are interested in where their food comes from, so that they are passionate about, you know, the food sector. So it goes back to, I would say, even pre-primary school, where we teach youngsters and kids where food comes from, to have an interest and a curiosity for food.
Well, it certainly is a very interesting debate, and I am going to thank you, Dr. Melissa van der Merwe, lecturer in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Stellenbosch University. I do appreciate your time today. Thank you. And just before we bid you farewell, let me reference our daily online poll. And you heard a representative, in fact, the president of the South African Medical Association, calling for a slimmed down cabinet. They were talking specifically from a medical front, but more broadly, it is a debate that is happening in political circles at the moment. So against that backdrop, do you think that it is realistic or impossible? Calls for a slimmed down cabinet, realistic or impossible? If you have a view on that, we would like to hear it. And you can participate in our daily online poll either on our X or LinkedIn pages. and I will bring you the results of that poll on the program tomorrow. And that's where we are going to leave it. That's our program for today. MoneyWeb at midday. We are live at noon weekdays. We are then up as a podcast. Goodbye to you, and thank you for listening.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.